This works for me. All right, so we're in Hilchot Deot. We are in the fifth chapter. And we're just going to do one last little line in Halacha Zayin, which I didn't want to get into because I wasn't sure if it'll be 60 seconds or an hour, depending on your comments. Okay. Okay. So the last line, we talked about, you know, how we relate to telling people when things bother us and how we relate to, you know, sort of comforting people or entering people's emotional state, whatever it might be. And all of a sudden, the Rambam just totally switches the energy of the halacha. Okay? V'lo yisaper im isha bashuk. Now, lo yisaper does not mean to tell stories. Like, it doesn't mean don't get up on a stage and tell a woman a story, right? Nor does it mean, you know, don't debate Baba Basra in public. Yisaper is a specific language that's just like telling stories. It's like, you know, like the idle chatter, schmooze, whatever it is, right? Don't have that kind of a schmooze. And it goes a little deeper than that, okay? Because where do I see, let's see if somebody here, you're doing brachos, right? Where do I see the concept of lisaper imisha? Anybody remember?
Give me a dot.
Brachos 43.
No, not even close.
It says brachos 43.
No, that's a different title. Just goes to show you, I don't look at these notes much, but...
Is it like...
There's a Gemara...
Like talking with Rabbi Akiva's wife?
Pardon? No.
The part where it's talking about what to do in bed, it says he should talk to his wife before 12...
So the night is divided into three watches. And one of the watches is the last watch of the morning. And that's the time when, right, Isha misaperet im bala, when a woman converses with her husband. What does that mean? Okay, so it's hard to sort of be able to communicate this before you get married. But, you know, one of the challenges when you have lots of children, and I imagine the times of the Gemara, they didn't have two or three kids, you know, like take a look at when you finish a siyum and it's Rami Bar Papa, Rufin Bar Papa, he's got like 9, 10 children. That was normal. There's no birth control. There's a mitzvah of puruvu. So when you have that kind of a family, so you don't get time to just relax, schmooze, catch up on the day with your wife unless you really make it. When do you have those quiet times when the kids are asleep? So there are two options. One option is after everybody goes to sleep late at night, but you're usually exhausted. And the other is, you know, inevitably one of you, like, you know, you wake up early for minyan, whatever it might be, you have that half an hour. So that's like a certain, it's not just conversation. It's a certain intimate conversation, okay? I'll give you an example here. Come sit over here for a second. Don't get nervous. I just don't know any other way to demonstrate this, okay? Let's say, we're in public here. Let's say that we're having a burger, okay? Two of us are having a burger, and we're just sitting like this, and there's a text in front of us. That's very different from sitting and having a burger like this. Now, it could be I'm hard of hearing, and I need to hear him, right? But it's a different thing. You can sit back there now, right? It's a different energy, okay? That's misaperet im bala. There's a certain intimate conversation that you have with someone when you have that type of relationship, right? It's not appropriate in the shuk. And I don't know if you've ever even thought about this before. Maybe it's good that you don't think about it. Maybe it's dafka good. The Rambam seems to think it's important to think about. But if you walk around, and especially in the old city, you will definitely have occasion, or me'er sharim, you'll definitely have occasion to see people who walk with their spouses, right? Go take a look and notice the difference between the way that happens in a community that's sort of attentive to halacha, to religion, etc., and a community that isn't, and you will see a difference, okay? You'll see a difference. Now, how you balance that and what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, is 50% objective and 50% subjective. In other words, like... you know, you could debate whether a married couple walks with their holding their hands, right? But just to give you an idea of how that is a question, I remember once Rav Tversky was taking a walk on Shabbos afternoon, and I happened to be taking a walk with Dorit, and we saw them walking up ahead, and he was walking along with his wife holding hands. And we noticed it because it was so uncommon to see a fellow with a long black coat and a beard, whatever. It doesn't matter. Like, I think that's a beautiful thing, but that's not the point, right? There's a certain type of energy that you don't have in public, even in your wife. Why? So let's get to that in a minute. So it's not because there's some isra lahalacha to touch a woman. That's a separate issue. One second. That's not where the Rambam is here. Rambam's not talking about halacha, whether you touch a woman, when you touch a woman, whatever. That's not what we're talking about here, right? V'afilu hi ishto. In other words, never mind that you don't have this type of conversation with a woman, even if she's his wife. O achoto o bito. Or his sister or his daughter. So I remember the first time I saw this halacha, I'm like, whoa. Okay, so what's the Rambam talking about here? So you can only understand this halacha in the Rambam if you put it into the context of the rest of the halacha. Okay, we said last week that the Rambam gets into the question of, you know, not sort of speaking to a person when he's angry and not sort of entering a person's space when he's in an emotional moment, right? And et cetera, and not looking at a person when he's doing something that might embarrass him. And I said at the time, it's a little strange that this is here, because Perek Vav, the sixth chapter, is what really deals with the issue of how a person connects, right? How a person gives tochacha or et cetera, or tells someone off. This halacha is all about me. This halacha is all about how you carry yourself, how it impacts you, how you affect your environment. So that's what this halacha is doing here, right? And the Rambam goes so far as to suggest, and you see this in other places, it's interesting, it doesn't say, Al tar be besicha imaisha. The Rambam quotes Pirkei Avos all over the place in Hilchos Deos. Here, he doesn't give the quote. He's not talking here about, and the commentaries note this, the Kesef Mishnah notes this, he's not talking about not talking with women, he's not talking about not having long discussions with women, because there is a Mishnah like that in Pirkei Avos, and there's a place to discuss that. He's also not talking about not speaking with women at all. He's specifically talking about Lo Yisaperi Misha Bashuk. We're talking about a very public place that lends itself to a certain type of behavior, right? Frivolity, fooling around, etc. So why would you think that the Rambam would suggest, and this is based on different Gemaras, that a person doesn't have that kind of intimate physical relationship, right? You know, that intimacy that's visible in the way people carry themselves, whether people are touching themselves or not, in the way they have that conversation, in the shuk. What do you think? Why wouldn't you do that? There are only two possible reasons I can think of. You understand the question?
Why would you not talk to a woman in a shuk?
No, why wouldn't you, in the public marketplace, have that kind of intimate conversation, lean over, giggle, you know, that sort of thing?
What about...
Right? In 1 second, in a public place... Right? Even if it's your wife. Well, why wouldn't you do it? What? Yeah?
Perhaps it would lead to a physical desire at that moment in time, which is inappropriate for that time.
See, I could imagine that as a possibility, except that the Gemara proves that that can't be. Because one of the major questions, halachically, that comes up in the Gemara, you all know there's a halach of yichud. Right? Yichud means that you cannot be alone with a woman. I'm giving you a broad definition here, so don't use this as a basis of psak halacha, but one way of understanding yichud, you don't allow yourself to be alone with a woman with whom you cannot have relations in such a way that it would be easier to come to relations. Like you don't invite her up to your hotel room, right, and close the door, right? Okay. So how come you're allowed to have yichud with your wife? Like 2 weeks out of the month or whatever it might be, when a woman's in nida, not only are you not allowed to have relations with her, but it's an isur kares. And yet nobody says the wife has to move out of the house or the husband has to move out of the house. So the Gemara says, Eino dome mi asher pat basalo, lemisha eino pat basalo, right? So Gemara, I think it's in Kedushin, right? A person who has bread in the basket, in other words, because you're in a relationship, you're married, you don't have the same sort of urges that you do when you're single, because you can wait a week or two. It's normal, right? And the Mitzvah Hashem, one day you'll get married, you'll understand that halacha. So it can't be that you can't have a conversation because of what it might lead to. You're allowed to have yichud without being worried about what it might lead to. Nachan? So that can't be the reason.
I would say it's like inappropriate for someone.
Why?
If you're supposed to like be like even when we talk about just going into a bathroom, like you have to go into a bathroom to do business and like come out. Like you're not supposed
right
to look at anybody, say anything to anyone. It's kind of just like that's just not how you should be in front of people. Like that's something for your private life. That's not something.
But why?
Outside in public.
Why?
It makes people awkward.
Okay, so one possibility is how this impacts sort of people's thought process. You know, like if you're doing things that are perceived to be somewhat intimate, right, in public, you can create intimate thought processes somewhere else. That's not appropriate. You have some level of responsibility for how you affect your surroundings. That's one possibility. There's another possibility.
It affects you because you're lighthearted in a public space. It's not as serious as like the bedroom.
Right, there's something to be said, although that I don't think is what the Rambam's talking about here. But there is something to be said for allowing for different energies in different spaces. The way you behave in a movie theater with your wife is not the way you behave around your own dining room table when no one's around. That's normal, right? But there's another possibility, and actually all the Mefarshim seem to suggest that this is what the Rambam is talking about here. And that's, anyone want to take a guess? Pardon?
How would they know it's your wife?
Oh, and if they don't know it's your wife, then what's the issue?
Yeah.
Well, okay, everything's possible Lichel Hashem, but why? This is also in Brachos. But why? You're not doing something you shouldn't be doing. Well, what kind of Mara sign? That's true. It is a form.
Not his wife, and they think it's inappropriate for him to be with someone who's not his wife.
So this,
like, you shouldn't go into like a McDonald's even if you're getting some water.
Okay, so there's a halacha, and you'll see in the continuation of the next halacha how why it's so obvious that this is what I was talking about here. The Gemara says that a person's not supposed to go into a churva, right? Maybe you remember this. You're not supposed to go into a ruin, right? Now that's an agarata. So it's an interesting question of how and whether it's halachic. I'm not going to go there right now. But the agarata says there are three reasons a person doesn't go into a ruin. One is because it could fall. It's dangerous. One is because of the mazikin. One way to understand mazikin is that there's a certain form of depression that occurs in places of ruins, whatever. It's not healthy to be in places like that. And the third...
If it's one guy, you suspect he's going to meet a harlot there. And
right.
Two people, you suspect they're going to do something inappropriate. If
right.
Three people, it's okay.
Right. So there's, so the third opinion is b'pnei chshad. Right. If you're driving through the South Bronx and you see some fellow that you know from shul, and he's walking into a tenement, an empty tenement, right in the middle of South Bronx. And he looks around, and then he darts in there. You don't assume that he's going because he found out there's a basement sale on Baba Basra, right? He may be going in there, but you don't go into a place like that because it's not healthy. Because people assume certain things, right? So that's what the Rambam's talking about here. If you're having that kind of connection with someone, right, and someone else doesn't know that she's your daughter, that she's your sister, or whatever it may be, you know, so. It's inappropriate to create that energy, right? Okay.
What if you're like the rabbi of the town, and like everybody knows who you are, and so and like they naturally could know who your wife is.
But you don't know that everybody knows that. I'm actually a good example of this case. I went to meet Mayan. She was getting out of the army on a particular night, and we already talked about you know that one day we'd go do this, and so I went to pick her up because it's a huge savings for her if I go pick her up and drive her back instead of whatever. And we had like a, you know, we used to, last year we had a chavrusa once a week. This is in the army, we can't do it. So we went and we stopped somewhere to have a cup of coffee and, you know, have dinner or whatever. And then we went. And, you know, you're sitting there with a girl, not a soldier, right? Somebody could see me and know me and not have any idea who she is. And we're sitting in an out-of-the-way place like near Glilot or whatever because that's just where we found a place to have a cup of coffee, right? So there's a way that you carry yourself that's appropriate or a way that you carry yourself that's inappropriate, right? And that's what the Rambam. So I'm not talking about the specifics about how you do it. What's valuable about this is just the thought process. The thought process, you know, you think about sort of these stories that come out in the news. And you have this all the time. Imagine, forget about chinuch. Imagine you decide to become a lawyer, right? You want to be a lawyer, right? Nebuch. So you decide you become a lawyer. And some client who's really broken up, right? She's upset. And she needs to see you. And she's talking about a very personal issue. You would think twice about inviting her into your office, closing the door, and telling, you know, whoever manages your calls, you don't want to be interrupted. Right? Not healthy. Not because you're going to do anything with the one-legged, one-eyed woman who shows up, but because there's a certain appropriateness, and that's what the Rambam's saying. You have a responsibility to sort of carry yourself. Questions?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I read this before, because you said it's going to be, like, controversial, whatever your words were, so of course I had to continue to read it. I thought maybe something about flirting. But then I saw it says...
Well, there is a type of behavior that you can have with people with whom halachically it's not... You know, it's very hard for me to describe this to you because you're not parents yet, you don't have children, right? But there's a way that I'll behave with my kids that I would never behave with a student. You know what I mean? And if you were watching it, you might think it's flirtatious behavior, but it's not. It's my daughter. Like this, it's ridiculous. But the way you do that in public is different than the way you do that in private. Like, you know, I don't know, what's a good example? You wouldn't have your daughter, right? When your daughter's 5 years old, okay? So, you know, she's crying, she's upset. What do? You pick her up, you put her on your lap, and you talk to her. Now imagine you're the camp rabbi, and there's a 5 or 6-year-old girl, and she's really upset. So 20 years ago, that's exactly what you would do. Today, you don't do that. There are even guidelines that say that over the age of 2, you now don't put a child on your lap. Why? It's ridiculous. But that's the society we live in. And I'd rather not put a child on my lap 50 times to avoid the one instance that somebody might be walking by and happen to have just read an unhealthy article about some other rabbi and make some ridiculous connections. And that's what we're talking about. you have a responsibility not just to the particular instance involved, but to how it's perceived and how you carry yourself and how people read into it. And that's challenging in many ways, but that's the reality where we live. That's what the Rambam was talking about. It's interesting, by the way, that the Rambam is dealing with these things, as you'll see in a minute, 1,000 years ago. This isn't a new issue. We all think this is a new issue. It's not a new issue. It's an issue that got forgotten to some degree in Western society, and now it's come back. There's a healthy way to behave. And I think 20 years ago, when I would discuss something like this with students, it was hard for people to get. I think today people get this. Like, you see too many stories in the news of people doing inappropriate things, so you carry yourself a certain way. It makes sense. But what's really valuable is the thought process that causes me to consider the impact of how I behave on the people who are around me. And never mind on myself. Makes sense? Yeah.
So for religious couples that are dating, if they can't have yichud, right? So that eliminates a lot of possible dates.
Right.
And they can't be at least like seeming somewhat intimate in a public space.
Right.
Like, what do they do?
Well, you're asking a different question first. You just don't realize it. You're asking whether there's a different question, which is, should a couple who are dating, right, before they get married, be having certain types of intimate connections? That's a good question.
That wasn't really like a question.
But they're connected.
Fine, but if you see two young kids on a park bench,
right?
You know, and they're like, you can tell like they're flirting and whatever,
right?
But you know, like, when are they supposed to do that? Where are they supposed to do?
Well, I think there's two separate issues here in terms of how, like, you know, especially young couples. I think there's a difference between a 28-year-old and a 19-year-old, right? But in terms of how young couples carry themselves when they're dating, seeing each other, and that sort of thing. So I think that there's a pyramid, there's a ladder, which has a lot to do with knowing where you are. Where you're at and who you are. In other words, one person, if he can just succeed in not doing yichud, you know what I mean? And I'm not talking halachically here, because there are clear halachic parameters and barometers. But I'm talking about being realistic in terms of where a person is at. There's one type of person who, if he would go on a date and sit on a park bench, he wouldn't sit right next to the girl. He would give himself a little space and have a conversation. And because the couple get used to it, it isn't an issue. Like, I didn't have that issue. It didn't create some sort of tension or negative energy. The tension that was there, which was a physical, was a healthy tension, right? So that's A. Sometimes you have a person who, you know, given where they're coming from, especially Balei Tshuva, it's a huge thing for them that they're just going to try to not do yichud. So if they end up sitting right next to each other on the park bench, I guess maybe they're better off than having to. So you have to find your space. That's A. B is sort of the value of this system as a whole, because I think that what happens is when you get into a relationship and it gets too physical, the physical by definition is limited. And that which is not physical, call it spiritual, has no limits, right? So when you connect to somebody spiritually, let's say in conversation and discussion and ideas, That's endless. I mean, those are the experiences that you have with someone that you're sort of developing a loving relationship with. They're endless. You can sit up till 3-4 in the morning and you don't want to say goodnight, right? The physical part of the experience, on the other hand, by definition, has limits, okay? And whatever limit you're setting for yourself will never be enough. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, the more of a physical energy you allow yourself to get into, the more you're going to get to a stage where that is limited and you want more. And so it makes it more difficult. And the deeper you get into that relationship, the more it has the ability to distract you from what you're really trying to do, which is to get to know the person and connect to the person on a spiritual level. And sometimes what happens, and we've talked about this before, sometimes what happens is you allow a relationship to get so physical that you think, you create the false sense of intimacy, you think that you're getting to know each other, you think you're really connected, but really the connected is a physical connection, and when the physical goes away, you realize you weren't developing your relationship at all. And, mm-hmm. I think that sometimes that's why couples who get married all of a sudden find themselves in tremendous challenge, because the nature of the physical and its limitations, never mind halacha, is that it wears off. You don't have the same energy physically when you're married 20 years that you do, you know, when you're dating. And that's normal. That's the way Hashem created us. So if you haven't created that relationship, which is the real growth process of the relationship, then you end up with a problem.
Two questions.
Yeah.
Do you think that the physical entirely works off of the, whatever you want to call the other aspects, spiritual, emotional?
I think they're connected. I don't think it always works off, because it depends where you and she are spiritually. You know, you can have a person who is spiritually declining. You know, you'll get to college campus, believe me, you'll see this all over the place. And such a person on a spiritual decline very often has an emptiness inside. And the physical seems to fill that emptiness, to fill that void. You know, it's like It's like there are all these experiences that Western society has, like New Year's Eve. So they've created this energy that you have to be with a date and you have to kiss at midnight at New Year's Eve, right? What if you're not seeing someone? So then you feel left out because you're not with someone. So you create this false experience so that you can have that experience and it's not real. Then you walk away and you think, wow, I had a real experience. But you didn't have a real experience. You just created a physical experience to fill a void. And if you allow that to continue to grow, you'll be sort of taking a walk into a physical reality that's not matched and it's not being consumed by the spiritual reality that you're really trying to develop. So one day you'll wake up either in a tremendous amount of pain or the relationship will fall by the wayside, which of course has its own challenges of hurting someone's feelings. You can destroy people like that.
Do you think that it's possible that once the physicality, this sounds very silly, but once the physicality runs out, so to speak, then at that point you can work on the other aspects of the relationship, or is it do you see what I'm saying?
Well, you have to understand.
Rather than doing the other aspects than the physical.
You have to understand the challenge with that. Let's say that would be true. It's always possible. Let's say that's true. Let's say the physicality runs out. You suddenly realize you're not as attracted physically. And now you decide, but I want to develop a spiritual relationship. That, first of all, presumes that you're both in exactly the same space. What if the other person feels that they're in a much deeper relationship than you feel? Inevitably, what that's going to do is cause someone else a tremendous degree of pain. Never mind the emotional energy it's going to drain from you and what it does to you. You understand what I'm talking about? That's A. B is it's much more difficult to do that because then you have to wake up and be conscious of the fact we don't really have a healthy relationship here. That's a very hard thing to do. Why would you do that?
Why can't you do both simultaneously?
Pardon?
Why can't you do both simultaneously?
It doesn't work that way. It's just not realistic because the definition of how this works, I'm not saying, it's not all black and white. It's not like if you're having some level of physical relationship, there's no spiritual development. That would mean that two people get together, only have a physical relationship, and then leave. Like, that's possible, and some people do that, right? The one-night stands that you see sort of, you know, around the world that hopefully we don't do, but, you know, that's out there. I had a friend who was younger than me, but, you know, we became friendly, whatever, in Israel, and he went back to university. And, you know, I remember having this long discussion with him about where he was going to college way before I was in my rabbinical mode, but I was, like, studying Gush. And he went back to university. It was really like a Jewish midbar. And he was debating going there or going to Columbia. And I said, like, you know, maybe you should think about Columbia because at least it's in New York or whatever. Anyway, he didn't do that. And this was a really solid college. And he thought, you know, this is like he's going to get everything he wants in life because it's in the solid college. And he found himself in a situation where he was invited to a party. And the party was so extreme after his having been in Shiva in Israel for a year that it just it blew him out of the water. It basically turned into a physical orgy. And I remember, you know, because we were talking on the phone because he freaked out. And I'm like, what do you mean? Right? Like, I thought he meant like people in the middle of the living room just disrobe and start doing all these things, right? And they don't know each other. I said, well, it can't be they don't know. Yeah, they don't know each other. Like, this was an epiphany for me. That's what people do. They go to a party. You know, it's like, I don't know, you have an itch on your back, so you scratch your back. So they have a different kind of itch. They go to a party, you scratch their itch. That's what they do.
This is where Moshe would say college was going to be awesome.
Right, maybe. Right. But these are the people who wake up and a year into it, 2 years into it, they have no healthy relationship in their life, and they're depressed. Those are the people who jump off of rooftops. But whatever. That's a different discussion. No, really. That's a different discussion. But anyway, this guy, you know, he ended up sort of leaving college, taking 6 months, and he ended up going to a healthier college environment. There is the possibility that they're somewhere in between those grounds, right? You know, it depends at the end of the day how important you developing a healthy relationship is. I will tell you that it's very rare that a person who desists from the physical type of relationship and has a healthy, growing relationship later in life regrets it.
Well, I mean, like, what about, like, a guy, let's say, will hold his girlfriend's hand, will, like, kiss hello and goodbye, but, like, all that time in between is just, like, quality.
You can only look at that question in retrospect. And there are two issues here that I think are valuable to be aware of. One is an issue of lo plug. Once Chazal came up with a system that applies the overwhelming majority of instances, right? And it doesn't ever make sense to have a system that says, well, but if you're capable of withholding and withstanding, you could do this, right? You can't have a system like that. Now, you're saying to me, is there a possibility that a person could, you know, just kiss a girl goodbye on the cheek, hold her hand for a moment, and never go further than that physically? Yes, it's possible. And if a person did that, and really nothing else ever happened, and then 20 years later he's married, he never did anything more than hold a girl's hand, whatever, I suppose he could look back and say that even though halakhically he did something that was problematic, he didn't really, you know, step over the the line of the understanding of halacha in a big way. It's not the same as someone who... The problem is you don't know. You don't know. There are many mighty oaks who've fallen along the wayside on those issues. And so the question becomes, what's the better risk? No, it's just the better risk that I do that. And I listen, I'm not on a crusade to get people to stop holding girls' hands. That's not like what I'm about. But if the topic comes up, if you ask me my opinion. So are there individuals who are capable of that? I'm sure there are. Are there many of them? No, I don't think there are. Because at the end of the day, once you have a physical connection of intimacy, you naturally want more. And that's a good thing. Hashem created us that way. That's a beautiful thing. But because you want that more, it brings a certain tension to the relationship. So what happens when she puts her arm around you? You go like, no? That's uncomfortable. You've been holding her hand. So you put your arm around her. And then what happens? She hasn't seen you for 2 weeks, so she gives you a big hug. So you say, no. Oh, I don't hug. I'll kiss you, but I won't hug. So that becomes uncomfortable. Like, that's the nature of the physical.
I mean, if you say it's okay.
It could be. It could be. If you do a research project, and I don't recommend this, but if you have nothing else to do with your time, you do research. Few and far between are the individuals who can hold a girl's hand and not go any further than and not even hug her, et cetera, et cetera. I also think there's something... No, I also think there's something else that happens, right? I wasn't challenging you. I'm just giving you a data issue. We're not in high school here, right? But I also think, or at least I try not to be, I also think that there's a second issue, which is it. Look, when I was 24, 25, 23, right? So I didn't really think about, am I ready to get married or not? But I was developing sort of the ability to understand who I was looking for, and it was a process. At least I knew that if I met a girl and it was really the right girl, I could end up marrying her. But I really wasn't in a rush to get married. And I met a girl, and I thought she was an amazing girl, and I ended up, my personal opinion was I would never get engaged to a girl unless I met her family. And I ended up going back to the States to meet her family, whatever, we never got engaged. And over the course of that trip, I started to realize there was something that was not quite there, and I started seeing her differently. And I eventually realized that it just wasn't going to be, right? But she was coming back to Israel, and it was a very difficult scenario. I basically had to tell her that I didn't think this was going to work out. And it was very, very difficult for her. As much as it would have been very difficult for me a few months earlier if she would have told that to me. But it's reasonable to assume that that kind of thing can happen if you're dating a person because you expect the possibility that something might come of it, right? Now, I dated girls when I was 19. And I don't know in retrospect whether that was smart or not smart. You could definitely debate that topic. But I didn't, and I didn't have any intention that a girl that I was meeting when I was 19 years old, that I was going to marry her, right? And what happens is, because you're not going to marry this person, because you're just attracted to them, it's sort of more that you're learning about what you're looking for, and she's learning about what you're looking for. But the physical intimacy creates an expectation and creates a depth of relationship that inevitably is going to make it much more painful for the other person when one of you breaks up. There was one girl that I went out with who I was in the Army. It was the end of my Army experience, and I finished officer's course. I finished as an officer or whatever, and then I finished. I was a civilian, and she was here for the year, and then she was going back to Yale, and I was staying in Israel. So it just naturally petered out because I wasn't going back to America, and she wasn't interested in giving up Yale to be here. So that's fine, right? But that was the only time I ever had a relationship that was serious at one point that nobody got hurt. Only time. Every other time, either I got hurt or they got hurt. And I think the fact that it wasn't physical made that much, much less difficult. But that's just my perception. I think if you look at the overall blueprint of halacha, the details of this system are brilliant. They're brilliant. The understanding, you know what? You go, they did a study. I read this in some book. Maybe it was Gil Mandelson. They did a study in a supermarket chain. And they did two things. Right, she told you about this. I think that's brilliant. I think that's really true. I think that's really true. When you
cashier touching your hand, you put just the change.
Yeah. I don't really think about this consciously, but I'm sure it's true. Like, I'm a very physical person. So when we start the year to write down, I'm actually conscious of not doing certain things. Because, like, you don't want to get into someone's space if you're not close to them. It's not fair. You get to feel closer with your students than they feel with you. It's just like with your children, right? But when we're sitting at on Yom HaTzmaut, let's say, or Yom HaZikaron, and I'm up at Dani Moshe's kever, which is absolutely one of the most difficult experiences for me of the year, and some Maraita boy comes over and gives me a hug, it's not inappropriate. Like, it'd be a little strange if he got off the plane and hadn't even met him, and we had a phone conversation, he gets off the plane, he gives me a big hug, and oh, that's nice, whatever, right? But we've been together for a year, we're closer than that. But your relationship is affected by that. Now, if you're doing it because you want to get close to your Rebbe, so then I don't think that's healthy. Like, you shouldn't, it shouldn't be a manipulative thing. But it's natural that when you get closer to a person, you know, if I came into the Beis Medrash one day, and some guy was sitting here, and he just looked like he wanted to cry, right? And I said, like, is everything okay? And then he told me, I don't know, God forbid his grandfather died, whatever it is. So I'd give him a hug. And it changes the nature of the relationship. It's not that that's your purpose. It's just a natural thing. You may not want it to change the nature of the relationship. You may just be doing it because you want to be nice. But it has an impact. Now, what you do with that knowledge and how that affects your sort of decision-making process and everything else, take it to the extreme, by the way. When you have actual relations with someone from the opposite sex, you've taken your relationship to a whole different place. You've created a physical intimacy that's very hard to match. On a spiritual level, Judaism believes you cannot match that on a spiritual level until you're actually committed to each other. That's called marriage, right? So what you've done is you've upped the ante, but you're not there yet. That is a recipe for problems on so many different levels. Confusion, pain, hurting the other person. Never mind all the physical issues that can come up. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah, two things. The camp that I work at, like after Havdalah, the tradition is that like, everybody practically gives every single other person a hug. I don't think it's for the sake of inspiring a sexual revolution. I think it's just because like it bonds people and like you feel like
okay,
like not so. I mean, do you think there's anything problematic?
I mean, like next Sunday when we're all breaking and a bunch of guys are going back to America.
What's
like,
different between guys and guys, obviously?
Oh, let me answer your question. It's a good question. Let's say. Okay, look, you know, the right to men are good-looking men. That's just who we are, right? So let's say you're back there, okay, and there's some girl who really likes you, okay? And so she comes over, give you a hug, and you give her a big hug. For you, it's just a hug. For her, it's not just a hug. That's a fact. Now the question is, one second. Now the fact, no, that's a fact. That's a fact. Now the question is what you do with that fact. By the way, there's another side to this coin. What if you're in a situation where, like I find myself in this situation very often with a handshake. I don't find myself in a situation that often with a hug, but it could happen, right? Oh, that's not true. I had a story like that. I went to Lincoln Square Synagogue, and I was giving a public lecture. And there was a girl, who should go nameless, who I had known back in my USY days, okay? And, you know, when I was like in 10th, 11th grade, it wasn't just, I wasn't even aware of these halachos. And I went to a masifta. It was just that they didn't talk about them like I told them. People didn't talk about this stuff. Like, the Rebbe didn't come in and say, let's talk about Nagia. Like, it just wasn't an issue. We were in a boys' high school. Nobody talked about that, right? So I was in USY. I would go to USY Saturday nights, and I'd be in Masifta the rest of the week, right? Didn't think about these things. And I had not seen this girl since high school. And she was now married and living on a houseboat with a guy, whatever. Great girl. Amazing person. So she heard that I was coming to town, and she happened to be in New York, and she was so excited. She was going to surprise me. Fine. So I'm up by the Shtender in the front. I don't know if anybody's been to Lincoln Square Synagogue, by the Aron Kodesh. And I'm getting ready for a lecture, and people are coming in. It was a big lecture. There were like a few hundred people there. And she comes in, and she sees me, and I see her. I'm like, well, I don't want to say her name, so we'll call her Georgiana. I don't know, whatever, right? Georgiana? And she goes, ah! She runs up the stairs, gives me this big hug and a kiss on my cheek. The whole show is sitting there watching like the rabbi just got hugged. Whatever. What do you do in a situation like that? Okay? Now, you can... No. So I want you to understand. That's why I brought this up.
Who are you?
No. I hugged her back because you could embarrass a person to such a degree, she would suddenly realize very quickly, because she knows I'm worth it or whatever, she would suddenly realize that she had done something inappropriate in front of the... That would have been so embarrassing for her. So I didn't think about it. I gave her a hug. And I actually developed a shita for these things now. When I think I'm going to be in a situation like that where someone's going to give me a hug, I carry books. Because if you're carrying books, they can't hug you, right? But I do that because I don't want to embarrass somebody, right? So there is the side. Like if you do that every summer, and everybody, and I'm not talking now about halacha. I'm not talking about halacha. The halacha is not simple. The Rambam does talk about the difference between derechiba and not derechiba. The Rambam is actually pretty extreme in this area. But if you're doing certain things, shaking hands, whatever, that is not derechiba. It's not as a romantic or a sexual innuendo. You're just shaking hands. You know, high five at the end of the game, whatever it is. So then I think the embarrassment factor enters in. There are different opinions on this. This is not a shirim sak. I can only tell you for me, if I have to err on the side of the halacha of hugging someone, or certainly shaking someone's hand, and be machmer in the area of embarrassing another person, I'm willing to take that risk. That's me, yeah. Right? But remember, I'm married. I have children. I'm in a different space. Not sure that it would have been so simple for me when I was like 19 or 20. Like I was more careful about those things then.
Okay.
So, but it's at least a question.
I think it's like
you realize that the theme of all of this, like aside, is the thought process and the sensitivity. Yeah.
Yeah, and then this is just more of an anecdote. I was taking the one bus through Mahasharma. I saw this couple, like Haredi, however you want to label them, and they're married because she was wearing a shadel. And you know they have those like bars in the middle of the bus where you can get off in the middle. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
They weren't touching, but they were very close to touching. And it was, on one hand, slightly uncomfortable, but on the other hand, like, Mahasharma seems very devoid of emotion, because it's like you walk in there, and it's like, halacha, 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 you know? But it was very, like...
That's where you go. I was there for Shabbos yesterday. You know, it depends on you.
All right, I'm not really making a statement about Mahasharma, but it's just nice to see, like...
Right, I'm almost touching.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm
look, you know, you have to understand. No, you have to understand. Every community, by its definition, has different types of people. And one of the flaws that we have in the way we look at the world, all of us, is that we just love to box a whole community. But there are people who are different, and people who are laid back, and people who are relaxed about these things, and people who are tense about these things. Overall, all those different genres that are the same genres as you have in our community, right, are in a different box. This box is a different box from the, I don't know, secular Wesleyan community, and it's different from the Mahasharim community. And within that box, though, there's range. And that's why the halacha comes along and says, well, okay, here's healthy range, here's unhealthy range. That's all. But the Rambam here, just to finish off this halacha, is really speaking about sort of the fact that I have a responsibility to how these, you know, how the perceptions of what I do affect my environment as much as what I do, affects the environment. And that's something worth thinking about, because most people don't even think about that sort of stuff. So let's stop here, Zat Hashem, and we'll continue tomorrow with Halacha Chet. Go ahead.